had a photo show. It's incredible. I will put the link back in the Zoom. And I wasn't going to use this slide because it's not particularly optimistic, but after the getting a lot of feedback after the murders in Atlanta, I wanted to both show this slide and take a minute of silence. So I am going to set my alarm if we can just take a minute to honor those. Thank you, everyone. There's one more picture I was going to show. Well, and I want to give credit to this student who did that incredible photograph. And then I had another one I wanted to share. These are all from our students. Really amazing. The theme is the future. And I wanted to share this one, because I hope we have really great ideas and are really thoughtful. But in the description, this artist, although is speaking about a video game, talks about after all the chaos is over, something went well. And I think we can celebrate that school is going to reopen. And after all of our pandemic chaos, things are going to get better. So I will put again in the chat the student where this incredible setting is. And then we can get started. I will unshare my screen. Okay, so let's start with attendance. Josefina.
Here.
Oh, thank you. Adrian?
Here.
Thank you. Mike? Mike, I can see you. I think you said here. I'll come back to you. Stephen?
Here.
Elise, here. Jonathan? Wei Ling? She's going to be a couple minutes late. Melissa?
I'm here.
Oh, great. Jason?
Here.
Dwayne?
Here.
Great. Diane?
Here.
Okay. Nora?
Here.
Great. And coming back to Mike?
Here.
Thank you. Oh, we definitely have a quorum. Thank you, everyone. Okay, Ms. Douglas, would you like to go over the meeting norms, please?
Yes, thank you. The purpose of this meeting is for our board of directors to meet with each other and conduct school business, as well as to receive input from the school staff and the community via public comment. Public comment may be made on topics that relate to the school. Comment on non-agenda items may be made at the beginning of the meeting. And after hearing a report, members of the public have the opportunity to offer comments in a designated time prior to the board discussion of that agenda item. Outside of public comment, members of the public are also welcome to observe the meeting. Please sign up for public comment in the chat. We want to be sure to see all the signups, so keeping the chat clear when public comment signups are being called for is appreciated. You may sign up for public comment at any time prior to the conclusion of public comment for that agenda item. You don't need to wait for public comment to be called to sign up, and may sign up now for a future agenda item by indicating your name and the agenda item in the chat. Public comment will be capped at 2 minutes per speaker. To be sure of hearing from a variety of people, minutes may not be transferred to other speakers. The board cannot respond to public comment on non-agenda items. Staff will do our best to respond to chat comments throughout the meeting, but may not be able to respond to every single one. To be sure your comments are heard by board members, please sign up for public comment. Please remember that we are a community of choice comprised of people who care very deeply about the school. We may have different ideas of how to achieve goals, and we may feel passionately about our points of view. This needs to be a safe space for a variety of opinions. We respect the timid voices as well as the loud ones, and we address each other in a respectful manner to model good citizenship to our students. For clarification on the recording, board members and members of the public should please state their names prior to speaking. And this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be posted on the school website. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's start with our student leadership report. Nora?
Hi. So last week's asynchronous days really helped to refresh students and were much appreciated from every person I talked to. As we enter the last quarter of the year, students are excited about the prospect of having in-person aspects of school interaction. And at the senior meeting this past Tuesday, a lot of seniors expressed sentiments of wanting to have in-person moments before we leave the school. Talk of sixth grade going back full-time for academics is really exciting for them as they'd finally get to meet each other face-to-face and build community bonds and in-person connection to the school. Admin is working really hard to get the school space ready and safe for students, which is really appreciated. We also had a spirit rally this past week, which had some fun games and was put together by a committee in the leadership class. So a big thanks and shout out to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Nora. Any public comment on the student leadership report? All right. Board comment and discussion. Nora,
Elise,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, this is Duane. I just want to acknowledge the student leadership. I mean, throughout all this, you know, your representation of the student, of the school and the student body, I just want to acknowledge you and just the larger leadership overall. So just thank you, Nora.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree, Nora. I appreciate you coming and giving us the student point of view and all this stuff. I know it's just a sliver of all the things happening, but really appreciate you coming. Okay, public comment on non-agenda items. We have five COSATs, people who would like to speak. Do you want to go in the order you have in there, Kev? Do you want to go first?
Yes, I will go first. Good evening, everybody. It's Mr. Choice, Instrumental Music, Step It Up. I'm speaking today on behalf of COSATs, who a couple of weeks ago sent an email to Elise, I should say, about requesting to be on agenda. And according to bylaws, it says is as long as you request 9 days in advance, then you should be considered to be put on agenda for a board meeting. And just seeing all the incredible, you know, programs, teacher presentations, and things that have been presented over the last couple of months, we felt it would be important to present some of the progress of our negotiations. As a COSATs team, we just wanted to speak as a part of the agenda. What was offered was for us to speak in public comment, so we're doing that today. There's a couple of representatives from our team who will be speaking on different things. We just wanted to have an update on what are some of the things we're doing with our COSATs bargaining and some of the proposals and things like that. So I'm gonna pass it over to Jeremy, if that's okay.
Yeah, thank you. Jeremy Taylor.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm also representing the bargaining team for COSATs. And one of the things that's been on our mind a lot increasingly recently is timing and the sort of the pace of this process. It was mentioned at the last board meeting that we've now passed the 2-year anniversary of when we first brought these concerns to the board. And so as we look at the process where it's at right now, we're growing concerned with the pace, the school year coming to a close. I wanted to share just two quick examples from the bargaining process that I think kind of illustrate, I don't know what the word is for it, or frustration, confusion, somewhere in that ballpark. So the process is building a contract made up of individual articles, they're varying lengths. Sometimes they're several pages. One of them that's short and fairly pretty just straightforward legalese is called assignability. And I'll just read the sort of the key part. It's basically one sentence long. It says, if during the term of this agreement, OSA contemplates a merger, affiliation, change of employer, or transfer of employees, OSA shall obtain a guarantee and written agreement from any new subsequent or successor employer that all provisions of this collective bargaining agreement shall remain in full force and effect. Basically, if anything were to change at the top end, the leadership of the school or the affiliation of the school, that doesn't nullify the contract. That was rejected. So that is now a temporary impasse. And then in a second article, we had a statement, again, standard template language we got from elsewhere. The parties to this agreement shall not interpret this agreement or any of its terms or work rules which implement this agreement in a manner that is arbitrary and capricious or discriminatory. Again, just kind of feels like standard, like legalese language that was rejected. That is now at temporary impasse. We have 2 tentative agreements out of those 26. Most things seem to be headed towards this impasse. And you know, there are certainly things that we thought would be deep discussion kind of issues. These were not them. So we're worried that this is happening on these very basic language, contract language kind of issues. And we're getting a lot of questions from teachers about how the process is going and is it going to finish soon? And I think this is a big part of why this process isn't moving faster than it could be, or at least from our perspective, that is. So now the questions are starting to shift and we're starting to get questions about, well, where are our offer letters? So if we had a contract, that wouldn't be a question because the contract would be it's kind of replacing that old model of waiting for offer letters. But here we are where it's starting to feel like maybe this contract won't be finished in time. And so we're having our sort of annual ritual of this springtime where we're wondering where the offer letters are. So those have not come out yet. And just the last thing I'll say about that is that historically has then led to teachers leaving, high turnover, and then without a competitive contract in place, it's going to continue the pattern also of difficulty in recruiting. So that pair of issues of teachers leaving and then difficulty recruiting is kind of looming on the horizon again. And that was one of the things we were hoping to avoid. All right, I think I maybe went over my 3 minutes.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm hoping I'm not gonna glitch out. I'm having some network issues here. So I wanted to just let you know that we have given our longly awaited compensation article. I'm gonna throw something into the chat, which for those of you that want to see it, you got a swell little slideshow. You're welcome to take a look at it. Basically, from our perspective, just to understand, when OSA opened in about 2002, teachers were paid $45,000 a year. In 2020, a first year teacher with the same, actually better credentials than that starting teacher was $52,362. And that's kind of where we're at right now, which is really problematic for the Bay Area. It's another factor is that in 2003, rents were significantly lower. And we were finding, just looking at the amount of money spent on rent, that teachers were spending about less than 25% of their gross income just to rent a a one bedroom apartment. They've probably rented smaller or larger depending on their situation. But that same apartment in 2020 now takes over 50% of a teacher's income. So that's really the sustainability problem we're seeing. And as we looked at the, I did some comparisons of the salaries that OSA teachers make compared to other districts. And we're really still at the bottom, even after a small increase in the last couple of years, we're definitely at the bottom. And as we head into this, definitely gonna need to hire teachers because we definitely will be losing teachers. We typically lose 15 to 25% of the teachers. I don't have those numbers exact. I'd have to look at it. I know 1 year we lost 18 teachers. As we're heading into the need to hire new teachers, we need to be competitive. And I know students and parents really want to see us hire more BIPOC staff here. And that's, I don't know that we can be competitive with the numbers. So that's really our big concern is on compensation. So actually with that, I'll hand it to Uma, who has a better understanding of some of those issues.
Thank you, Chris.
Hi, thank you. Good evening. I'm Uma Joshi Garcia. I'm a World History and Ethnic Studies teacher. I presented at the last board meeting about our new diversity, inclusion, equity, and justice program that we are creating. And I just want to make sure that there is a strong link between JEDI concerns and teacher salary and teacher pay and compensation that we've been presenting. We have seen a very large number of teachers of color leave OSA, mainly a lot of them due to financial reasons. I'm definitely a young teacher that struggles with my own, with my student loans, with not being able to afford rent. I currently have to commute back and forth between Pinole, California and San Diego, California, because I actually can't even afford rent in the Bay Area during the pandemic. So I'm actually going back and forth across the state, staying with family because I cannot afford to even live close to OSA. And I'm lucky to be able to do that because I'm remote. But once we start transitioning back into school, that's going to be a really hard process for myself and for a lot of new teachers who are struggling to make ends meet in the Bay Area. So I just wanted to make that connection that OSA is struggling to retain its teachers of color and young teachers and teachers who are strapped financially with loans. And we're going to see that problem increase if we cannot retain our teachers and make sure that they are able to sustain themselves financially at the school. And we all stay here because we love the school and we love the students, but at the end of the day, that makes it really hard to justify staying at a school that we cannot see longevity, sustainability at. So I just wanted to speak on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Uma. Thomas?
There we go. Good evening, everyone. This is my first time on. So, but I'm just here representing COSAT as a part of the COSAT team. I'm one of the longer tenured, I like the word tenured, faculty members at OSA. This is year 14. So I've seen a lot. One of the things that in conversation with our administrative staff in our meetings that came up was the OSA way. And I'd mentioned that because I'm very proud to be a part of the OSA way. And the OSA way was and still has a hopeful feeling of collaboration and teamwork. And because I come from an athletic background, you know, I'm so accustomed to seeing teammates work collaboratively together to get a shared result. And having been a part of OSA's history, we've been able to do that. What we haven't been able to do is do it now as a union with certain parameters and needs that have already been expressed. And so I'm hopeful. And which is why I've been a part of the OSA way. But, you know, we don't want to have our team not be successful for what we all want, which is we want healthy, vibrant, encouraged students to come out into our community and to go out into the world like the Zendayas, but she's just one of many that I've seen come through. And as I shared with students, I didn't know Zendaya was going to be Zendaya, but it was the OSA way of collaboration and spirit that ignites these young people, as well as has kept a lot of us around. And so at this point, you know, we just want to make sure that we can do it the OSA way in doing the things that are needed to, as my colleagues have mentioned, to retain good people and to attract good people. We don't want to be a place where people leave. We want to be a place where people are like, wow, I put my application in. I hope the best. I hope they want me. I hope I can be a part of it. That's what we want. But we know it can't be a pie in the sky wish. It actually is going to come with some teeth. And it'll need the cooperation of everyone to get that done. So I know when the board convenes, at least it's my understanding, when you convene, that people just kind of hang out. So hopefully they can hang out with COSAT. And if there's any questions, concerns, or things that can be answered, there's a Zoom link that they can go into and just hang out and get any information that hasn't been addressed. And I appreciate you giving me time to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen Morphin.
Hi, my name is Karen Morphin, and I wanted to talk in non-agenda items regarding COSATs. I want to follow up on the previous comment that I had made last board session, that it is now hiring season, as some of the COSAT members have stated. I want to emphasize that at the level that OSA teachers leave, it's much higher than most of the schools around the Bay. It is so common that every year leaves so many teachers leave that it's starting to get normalized, and we should not be comfortable with the normalization of high turnover at any company, even more so in a school like OSA, that has these high quality artistic teachers that have passionate long-term employees. And the reason why they're able to afford being at OSA is because they might be homeowners. So I just want to remind everyone that if we don't formalize a contract and people don't have offer letters, we're coming down to, if it's not written down, that it's not really something that you value. If a value is not written down, then it's not a company value. So if we don't put it in writing for our teachers, we're not really valuing our teachers. And it really becomes a hidden rule. Kind of, if I come in later to OSA, then I may get a new teacher salary and then puts everyone else at the bottom pay, and it's not equitable. I would like to request the board that we start measuring data as to how many new hires we bring in and how many years they stay, when they leave, and what demographic they come from. If we're really working towards equity and becoming an anti-racist organization, these are the first points of data that actually begin to get tracked. And then it's comparing a 5 and 6 year period. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Brad Erickson.
Yeah, Brad Erickson, parent, also educator and union member. I just want to say how grateful I am to our teachers for the incredible work you've done, and especially under pandemic, where for all of us educators, it's been a lot of extra work, learning to teach in a new way, this remote learning, all the extra hours we put in trying to do the best job for our students. So I'm so grateful to all of you and want to appreciate that. I also think that, you know, the low pay you've been receiving, I want to acknowledge that that's harmed you. It's harmed your ability to, you know, like to force Uma to couch surf and, you know, what she's doing and all the other things that's forced you into the hard choices just to be able to do your job. And I would really urge the board and for OSA to repair that harm by fast tracking this negotiation process. 2 years is really too long. And I think that's harmful to drag it on. It's harmful to teachers who've already been harmed. And so I'd say repair the harm by speeding up the process. And if there's a problem of, you know, maybe this is new, maybe this is something that the OSA team negotiating doesn't know how to do. Bring in a mediator, bring in someone who could mediate this. Because, you know, there's 26 articles and 2 years later, we've got two of them agreed to and two at impasse. That means they're not going to get a contract for 3 or 4 years. So I really urge to move on this, repair the harm, save our teachers. Thank you very much. And I support Karen's request for good data, because we can't really study what's happening with equity if we don't know those figures. So thank you.
Thank you. Melinda?
Hi, I'm Melinda De Jesus. I'm the mom of Stinson and Malaya in 10th grade and 6th grade. I'm also an associate professor of critical ethnic studies at California College of the Arts. And I just want to ask, or just put out there, the teacher contract, the COSATS contract, is an equity issue and a sustainability issue. And I just want to know, why is it taking so long? Like Brad and Karen before me, our teachers, I just want to support the teachers and say that they have done an incredible job. And I know a tiny little bit about how difficult this is because I too am teaching online. But I also know from the parent end how hard it is to engage my own kids because it has been such a hard year. So I really want to put this out to the CCA community. We really need to support these fantastic teachers that has been supporting our children throughout this entire year. The school year is almost over and it's taken way too long for this bargaining agreement to come to the fore. So we really, really need to have this finished so we don't lose any more teachers. And it is an equity, a sustainability issue. It is unethical for these teachers to be teaching without a contract right now. So we really need to support them. And we really need to kind of just stop this turnaround of teachers that happen at this fantastic school. So I'm really hoping that we can see some movement on this. And I also agree with Karen and Brad that we need to have this data as well. So thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. Ty? Oh, Ty, you're on mute.
Yeah, sorry. Hi. Okay, yeah. Definitely seconding everything that everybody's been saying. That's like extremely frustrating to hear from COSATS how this has been going for the past couple of years. Very, very frustrating. And like, I think what's the most frustrating thing is that all of these things have been said before and they've been said for like 2 years. Like this union was created like 2 years ago when we were having these exact same conversations about our teachers are leaving, it's affecting our kids' education, it's an equity issue, like it's unjust, the rent needs to, like all of these things have been said, this has been a conversation that has been had. And like the fact that very little progress is made, like 2 out of 26 articles is actually infuriating. Like that's very extremely frustrating. Yeah, okay, 1 year, yes, okay, 1 year, but still like that's very frustrating, especially since like teachers' contracts are not like a rare thing, they're not like super difficult to negotiate, like OUSD, all these contracts, you can use those as a model, like it's not like no teachers' contracts have ever been negotiated before, like it just has to, it has to happen, like it's unjust to say that we're trying to commit to equity, to say that we're trying to commit to our students, to say that, yeah, it's embarrassing, like all of this stuff. And I know it's not really like the board's responsibility, but like, just for like, it has to just like, you know, okay. That's like very, very, very bad. Like we just need to get on that because it's, yeah. Yeah. 2 out of 26 articles. I keep like focusing on that number because that's just like crazy. And the fact that the articles that aren't being agreed upon are such like basic articles that like make common sense, like it actually, yeah, it just makes any claims that we are committed to equity, it makes any claims that we are committed to our teachers, any of that, it makes it like untrustworthy, like we can't, it's very difficult to believe that that's true because there is no evidence of that given like how this process has gone from what I'm hearing, like from a student perspective. And so that just like very much needs to change. It's very, yeah. Yes. So solidarity with the teachers and with COSATS. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I believe we have all of public comment. The consent agenda. Does anyone want to pull anything out for discussion? Or could we have a motion to vote on it?
So moved.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I was trying to get in here. I have a change in the minutes. Is now to bring that up?
Yeah.
Okay, so under the presentation, the school presentation and the comments that are attributed to me, I also wanted it to be noted that I made the comment that I think we need to consider and discuss the placement of the equity task force and to figure out what's the best placement of the equity task force in terms of a board task force versus an administrative task force.
Okay. So with that amendment, any other amendments? Okay. With that amendment, Diane, do you want to still make a motion?
I do. So move.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
Thank you, Jason. Okay. Roll call vote. Josefina?
Yes.
Adrian?
Abstain.
Mike?
Yes.
Steven?
Yes.
Elise? Yes. Weiling?
Yes.
Thank you. Melissa?
Yes.
Jason?
Yes.
Dwayne?
Yes.
Diane?
Yes.
Thank you, everyone. And motion passes. School update on in-person learning. Woohoo! And fall 2021 plans.
Good evening, everyone. Before I begin the school report, I just would like to make a comment. First, I want to make it clear that we hear your concerns and we really want to support our teachers. We value your commitment to the Oakland School for the Arts and agree that your salaries have not kept pace with the cost of living. Last year, the board agreed to a $400,000 deficit in order to protect all teaching positions, but obviously that's not a sustainable solution. And to chart a path forward towards financial sustainability, we're in the process of carefully reviewing the school's financial condition, including revenue and expense projections that consider upcoming building lease renewals and loss of billboard revenue, which will cost an additional $500,000 in annual rent. We're developing a robust communication strategy that significantly shores up fundraising efforts and goals, which means better wages eventually for teachers. We appreciate the Labor Management Committee's support during these unprecedented times, and we're looking forward to participating in an ongoing collaborative discussion. Since this school year started, the OSA team, consisting of myself and Mike, Kimberly, and Lori, have been devoting 6 to 10 hours a week, working diligently with COSATS. And again, we hear your concerns and we are gonna move forward as quickly as we can. So thank you. Can we go to the slide deck, please? Okay. This is a beautiful piece of artwork by a senior, Lane, I hope I don't mispronounce her name, Jacobus. And especially in this moment, difficult moment that we're in, I wanted to recognize this piece of artwork. So tonight, we're gonna have a brief report tonight focusing on returning to in-person learning. As you know, we've all seen and heard tremendous amount of information in the past 3 weeks, especially since the last board meeting with COVID-19 health and wellness protocols and school site safety guidelines. Our administration has sent surveys to our students, our staff, and our parents. They've collected and compiled a lot of data to review. Meetings between the administration and COSATS and teachers have taken place. And Mike is gonna give a nice robust update on where we are with our school opening plans. Afterwards, I'm gonna circle back to answer some questions that the board had asked at the end of last meeting. Julie Humphrey has joined us tonight to share some updates on the WASC, in case you don't know what that is. That's the Western Association of Schools and Colleges.
And Kimberly Palmore will share the funding sources that we applied and received to pay for the return to in-person learning. This is going to help offset some costs that we normally would have taken out of our operational costs. So I just want to thank everyone from the deepest part of my heart. The amount of late nights and weekend work that's been done by all parties to build this has been pretty incredible. So thank you. Mike?
Thanks, Lisa. And before I jump in, I want to echo that too. The COSATS members who presented earlier today, a few of them I've been working with for 10 to 15 years, and I am in total agreement that we cannot sustain the turnover that we've had over these years. It will push me out of this building because it is so exhausting. I'm in support. I hope we're able to come to an agreement. The last year that we've spent has been exhausting in all regards. And negotiations have been a big focus of what we've been doing. It's been entirely while we've been remote. So I support them. I really appreciate Mr. Coleman, who I've worked closely with for a long time, and hearing him mention the OSA way. It is the scrappy way that has gotten us by. Mm-hmm. It's time that it evolves, because scrappiness can only be sustained for so long. So I just want to say that before I jump in. If we could go to the next slide, please. So in-person instruction status update. I'm gonna do my best in the evening to have some energy. I'm a little tired at this point, but there's things to be excited about. We're no longer in the purple tier. We're in the red tier in Alameda County. In order for that to become a fact, it has to meet the criteria for 2 weeks straight, which happened last week. So that means that you can return to campus if you have a safety plan posted to your website. Okay, so something I've said over and over again is, just because you can doesn't mean you should. We need to be cautious. We need to be careful. We had three priorities that we put in place last March when we went remote. And number one was health and safety, and it's still health and safety to this day. That being said, we're doing all the preparations, and we have been doing the preparations for enabling people to get back on campus when we determine it's appropriate to do so. The priority is the 16 exterior rooms that they have windows. We want to, you know, no brainer. Let's make sure we have the airflow. We have air purifiers and sanitizer stations on order that will be installed shortly. And this is big news. The HVAC system has now been serviced to address airflow issues. There's still climate issues in terms of temperature that will be relevant on hotter days and on colder days. But what has taken place at this point is to ensure that all air entering a classroom is coming from the outside, and all air leaving a classroom is going to the outside. So that has happened in the last couple of weeks, and that gives us confidence to move into certain classrooms. The interior rooms they have the HVAC improvements. They will have the air purifiers, but we wanna have professional analysis before we determine that it's safe to be in those classrooms. So that's something Ms. Cheatham is working on. I wanna give Ms. Cheatham a huge shout out, by the way, because she's working crazy time to try to get all this done and has to deal with me coming up a little frustrated at times trying to expedite, and she's really doing a tremendous job here. CDC state and county guidelines are being followed. CDC is helpful, but if the county guidelines are more stringent, we will follow them because they're more specific to what we're experiencing at a local level. As we make determinations, feedback is critical. Staff, family, and student surveys all went out within the last month. We had a great response rate to those surveys, better than we have in a typical year, which is very helpful. A second round of surveys went out to sixth grade families, which I'll talk about in a minute. A detailed update went out to all families last week that shared just kind of all of this stuff I'm giving you now and more. I think you guys actually might be on the list of all families, so you might have actually seen it. And we have a town hall coming up this Monday for our sixth grade families, which I'll talk more about in a second as well. April and May town halls will be focused on our August planning. And in case you're not aware, I run a town hall once every 3 to 5 weeks. It's shifted over the year, specifically to get family engagement. And Zoom is one of those things that we have learned will probably be a good thing to keep using moving forward to get as high of a turnout as possible on those kind of engagements. I've also joined the Constella thread for a place for families to ask questions on a daily basis. I don't wanna bombard people with email information daily, but it's a good place for people with the urgent information to get onto that discussion. And I'm on there as much as I can to respond to the questions that come up. There's been a spreadsheet put on there. One of our parents, Danielle Morris, has done a wonderful job of helping organize and orchestrate all of that. You know, there's funding sources. There's multiple grants happening right now. All of our planning is done to meet the eligibility of those grants when possible. And it looks like We should be, even for the grant that would need to be in place to get us back in April, it looks like we should be eligible and have all of our plannings in alignment with it. Next slide, please. So phase one, I reported to you guys last month, there were three phases we talked about. Phase one, I mean, it's rough numbers, but somewhere around 100 plus students getting into the building, that's utilizing those 16 exterior classrooms. We are shooting for that, to get that beginning in April. And I'm gonna give you some details on what that'll look like. The feedback from the families, the students, the teachers, and the counselors, in addition to our identified academic needs, we do in-depth data analysis, as you know, we've gone through two presentations so far this year, is helping inform us in terms of who we should bring on to the campus first and why. And then paras are being recruited to support this on-campus instruction. 10% of one of these grants, one of the more significant grants, has to be allocated to paras, which is good. It holds schools accountable to bringing in the extra classroom support needed. I went and had coffee with one of our wonderful alums, Tracy Thomas, last week, and I've passed on the job description, and I would love to see those para positions filled with our alumni to the best of our ability. It would just be a great way to also bring our alumni onto campus, and we know who they are, they know our culture, they can help support us. Next slide, please. You will see on the next three slides, the three different groups that we're intending to bring back to campus in April. So first is our sixth grade class, and that would be all interested sixth grade students and families. Equity is the focal point for this design process. And this is back to, just because you can doesn't mean you should. If you bring back just the people who want to come back to campus, who have the transportation, who are able to, what about the students at home? If you design a program that now diminishes the quality of education for the students that are continuing remotely, it's one of those situations where just because you could, you probably shouldn't. So this is the focal point of all decisions being made. Compromises need to be made, and we don't want it to be in the direction of the equity in terms of what we are providing for our students. The sixth grade teachers on this on-campus team are joining this team on a voluntary basis. We were fortunate that just in, you know, a non-pressure organic way, there's enough. I'm somebody who can't wait to get back to campus. I'm a people person. I'm really sick of this room. There's a handful of other people that feel the same way and feel comfortable returning to campus. So for the April return, organically, this has worked out very nicely that there's no pressure. It's something that's done with a mutual agreement. In the sixth grade specific survey, 78% of our sixth grade families expressed interest in returning to campus. That's more than I thought it would be. And not only that, they have a high preference for 5 days a week, for as many hours as we can offer. The most we're looking at offering right now is 3 hours a day. Once we get to actual signups, that number might go down a little bit when people see exactly what's being offered and get all the details, but we're preparing for a significant number of students to be on our campus. There's 106 sixth graders right now. So, you know, you can put that around 80 students if it continued with the 78%. The tentative dates are April 1st and April 2nd for an orientation. These students have never been on our campus on a school day, unless they were on a tour. And so I don't take for granted the importance of a student being able to make eye contact with their classmates. When you're on Zoom, you don't lock eyes with anybody. You think you are, but you're not sure in any given moment. This isn't healthy in terms of community building, in terms of building the foundation. So we're gonna have a couple orientation days on April 1st and 2nd with instruction starting on April 12th, the Monday after spring break. This works well with the grant alignment because every day you do not return to campus from April 1st on, you lose 1% of that grant, which would be about $5,000 a day. That Thursday and Friday before break fits very nicely for us to do an orientation and still be eligible for all the funding. Chris Bradburn, major shout out. Chris is one of these people that I'm talking about who I've worked with for many, many years. We were collaborative on a middle school team probably about a decade. Her and I are working very closely together right now, and more so in the next coming weeks. She rose to an organic leadership role because she's innovative and ambitious and has really come up with some great ideas on how to design this programming. So I discussed with her and with all the teams involved, are we comfortable acknowledging that Chris is taking on a leadership role here? And unanimously, everyone supports it. So Chris and I have a meeting scheduled tomorrow and are gonna be really working together over the next couple of weeks to pull this plan off. You're welcome, Chris. And I know she's working really closely with Mr. Q and Ms. Farmer and the whole sixth grade team. Shout out to everyone who is helping make this possible, but Chris and I are definitely gonna be burning some midnight oil to pull all this off. Next slide, please. Another part of the phase one would be the in-person support for prioritized groups of students in need of academic intervention. This is being led by Ms. Zog. Ms. Zog and I work very well together. We have a great division of labor, and we have, in this circumstance, been able to divide this. I am focused on sixth grade. She is focused on the prioritized cohorts. And these worlds overlap, and we discuss and we communicate regularly. But she would be able to do much more detail in terms of presentation on this. She had, I think, 87 students they identified as being somewhere within the realm of consideration to bring back to campus. And now they're working on what does that look like? Some of them are gonna get extra support while on campus, some through para support while remote, limitations in the building, you know, add another constraint, but she does not see kids as a group of kids. She sees every kid as an individual and is managing prioritization beautifully on that. And I have no doubt that they're gonna get service that is just exceptional through this process. Next slide, please. The other group that would come back is our 12th graders. Nora, thank you for your presentation. We met with the 12th graders earlier this week. I was actually surprised to hear how many 12th graders would love to come back for academic classes. The initial survey data did not suggest that when we were kind of going through our planning and decided to prioritize sixth grade, but a lot of 12th graders are like, please, just they I think a little bit of jealousy of the sixth graders. Let us back. We've been here for 6 years. We really want to come back. So I'm so happy that we are able to, if things stay the way they are, bring our 12th graders back for the ceremonial engagement things that need to happen at the end of a high school experience. 7 years in one place. Some of us who have been on this planet much longer have never been in any single place for 7 years. So the OSA experience is unique, and we're looking into how we can provide the ceremonial closure for them. 12th grade teachers have been part of planning for these engagements, and it also has been super organic in that a few teachers are comfortable and want to be present. There's no pressure, but we're going to be able to have the support to be able to design some activities. We have a possible outside graduation. I didn't think that was, we've known about this for a few months, and we've been talking behind the scenes, like managing expectations, maybe not share this with the students yet because we don't want to let people down, but we're confident enough that it is a very likely scenario, and we have a parent who works at City Hall that has graciously extended an offer to help support and donate the space if we can provide certain things, porta potties, et cetera, to make an outside graduation ceremony actually happen at City Hall. So we're hoping that that can become a reality. And Miss Wendy Snyder is working with the families, and Mr. Roos is also working with the 12th graders to put all these things in place. Other things we're considering are a COVID-safe senior picnic. We typically do that at Lake Temescal each year, and it's a beautiful just event to have all our seniors come together. Senior Salute is an artistic farewell where it's like a talent show of sorts without a judge, where our students can sign up for any type of artistic presentation, even outside of their specialization at school, and just gather and be together and have families come in, and everybody gets to perform. We're looking at what kind of options could we do. Maybe it could be online, maybe it could be outside. And then a class or two on campus. I know the seniors have been pushing to have it be more. I don't know if that's possible at this point, but they really want to just have that experience of being, they keep bringing up Mr. Taylor's government class and want to be able to have that experience one or two more times before the end of the year. So the next 2 weeks are going to be crazy, and we are going to pull this off and do everything in our power to make this happen for our students. Next slide, please. So phase two and three, there's kind of like a gray area between them, but this is bringing in the rest of the students up to our 820 that we are working on bringing in. Side note, enrollment's looking good. We had 360 kids sign up for the 126th grade spots, and our lottery went well, and the preferences and priorities all fell into place. And what we put into our charter to try to increase diversity at the school seems to be falling into place. I can fill people in detail later. But we have 820 kids that are going to be on our student body. They're not going to fit in our building as long as there is any type of social distance requirement in place. So I just want to make that clear now. But social distancing is currently at 6 feet, may change to 3. All planning is being done with all these different hypothetical scenarios. Arts instruction really has taken a hit, not in terms of like the effort that's being put forth and the quality that the teachers are bringing, but it really demands in-person instruction. So I want to prioritize it. We could not prioritize arts in this first phase because we have so many mixed grade level classes. The overhaul that it would take to scheduling to do that for 2 months of school would simply, the cost would outweigh the benefit. But as we look into August, we're trying to see how many kids can we bring back safely into the building, and how can we design a program that gets the arts back as the focal point in terms of in-person, and brings the academic instruction back as well. We'll follow all health and safety guidelines, of course. Like I said, planning for multiple scenarios. And we're currently collaborating with COSATS on a weekly, if not more, basis to establish this planning team. Last summer, we had a team of 27 people to plan what happened this year. It was a rough process in that there's a lot of voices. That's great. It's a powerful process, but it can be challenging to have so many voices. I think it worked. I think we've had a pretty good year. I know not all people are like thrilled, but that's the circumstances. We've pulled off a pretty good plan for this year, but we've agreed to bring that team down to a fewer number of people, probably somewhere less than 10 people to keep efficiency in place. We don't need to reinvent the wheel from scratch. We've learned so much over the past year, and we're in the process right now of establishing what that team will look like so we can work throughout the remainder of the school year, make sure those people are compensated for their extra time, and get information to our families before we leave for the summer so they can have as close of a sense as possible in terms of what August will look like before they leave. Next slide, please. So in order to qualify for the first grant, the in-person grant, which I think is somewhere around $230,000, our phase one plan, which is like this thing that is just in heavy momentum mode right now, it needs to be approved by you guys by the end of the month. So in addition to the details in this presentation and the campus safety plan that's posted on our school website, I want to know from you guys what you would like to see to feel comfortable approving our plan and this April 1st return. And that, along with any other questions or comments you may have.
So I don't think we can approve the campus safety plan. Is it an additional item we have to approve?
I believe it is. And
is it the in-person learning plan?
Yeah, and I believe it needs board approval by March, 31st.
So, Romy, do we have the document that's getting voted on, or do we need to have another meeting?
I think we might need to have another meeting. Let me see if the board and the public have been presented with this in time.
And okay. I don't mean to drop a bomb on you like that. This has been like how everything has been in recent weeks is short.
Yeah, I don't think we can vote tonight because it's not agendized as an item to vote on, unfortunately. To answer your question, Mike, I'll vote for what you guys feel good about.
Okay. I didn't expect a vote tonight. I just want to make sure that if we're probably going to need to schedule another meeting, I want to make sure that you have all information you need to feel good about it.
Yeah, no, thank you for, I'm blown away by all this great news. Thank you.
Hey, isn't it on the agenda?
It's not as a vote.
It has to say we're going to vote on it.
It's just presentation. Got it.
And by the time I had picked up on that piece of information, we were, I think, too close to putting it on there. So that's...
Mike, you're juggling so much stuff. We can come together to have a meeting.
We've all been there, man. Thank you.
And we can talk more about that in the public comment, but Lisa, are we going... So Mike and everyone, I started writing down everyone's names and it got too long. Really appreciate all the work on this. Lisa, were you going to say something before we went to public comment?
Our thing before public comment.
Yeah, great.
We'll go back to the slide deck. So that was an immense amount of information that Mike just rattled off there, which was pretty awesome news. So thank you so much. I just wanted to circle back because when the board meeting ended, there were some questions that some folks had asked me to follow up on. And some of these were, there were questions with regards to how is OSA recruiting staff, especially how is OSA recruiting people of color for positions, and what community partnerships has OSA aligned with? I'm so sorry, my puppy is squeaking in the back, like right on the other end of the door. Oh my goodness. And where are we posting current positions? So we really want to cast a wide net to many organizations and consultants regarding recruiting qualified candidates for positions. I just looked at some data today, and if you look at all the staff, classified, certificated management, 40 out of 102 people are people of color, which is not enough. And we do need to do a much better job at recruiting and strengthen those efforts. So next slide, please. So in order to do this, we really need to develop relationships and partnerships with local colleges and universities by connecting to deans and chairs of the departments. Some schools that we have connected to within the past number of years, prior to me stepping in, is Mills and Holy Name, San Francisco State, and others. Also, a lot of local community organizations. This year, we have made some special connections with Roz Nash at the People's Conservatory and Candace Wicks Davis. And through these partnerships, it's great because we can hand, like we did with our JEDI coordinator, to organizations so that they can share this with their communities if they know of anyone that they think might be interested. Recently, we had four organizations that were recommended to us. And our HR department, which is Lori, a one person department, has reached out to each. We have the California Association of Black School Educators, the Black Teacher Project, the National Alliance of Black School Educators, and Black Educational Network. The last piece I wanted to share on the top form there was alumni. I've had the pleasure of working in three prominent arts public schools throughout the country. And in each one of those, the alumni are really present in the school as teachers, as chairs of departments, and as administrators. It's incredible how when it makes an art school makes such a mark on you that you want to give back and circle back in your profession. So I wanted to share that this year, OSA has recruited a few alumni. Currently, we have Tavia Persia teaching for us for Step It Up. And this was all due to our wonderful Step It Up team who reached out and got teachers. But she was teaching theater. She was dynamite. I saw a few of her classes. And of course, we have Sarah Vella, who is leading our Vocal Rush. And I have to give a huge shout out to her and the Vocal Rush team because they just won the quarterfinals in the ICHSA, which is a real lovely international a cappella high school competition. We will be reaching out to our alumni to share upcoming job postings so that they can share this with the alumni community as well. And we will be hiring paraprofessionals next year. So of course we'll share that. In the bottom portion of the slide, these are some organizations where we posted positions. EdJoin is a nationally recognized online job bank for education that most schools do apply, you know, post at. The Art Schools Network is a national organization that unites all the art schools in the country. I shared earlier that Emiliano Estrada spoke at one of at their conference last fall, as did I. And they have a lovely job bank that a lot of artists and a lot of arts educators go to. We have the National Science Teaching Association that we've been associated for several years, ZipRecruiter. And this year we attended a regional job fair, a teacher of color job fair in January and February to do some recruiting. One of our parents works for LinkedIn and said that that would be a wonderful place for us to align some of, you know, to post. And I just wanted Romy to step in real quick to share some social media sites that we began this year and expanded upon so you could get an idea of some data here.
Thank you. Next slide, please, David. Awesome. Thank you, everybody. So yes, we've been making good use of the magic of social media. Our Facebook posts have reached over 1,000 people and have been clicked through over 100 times, as well as being reposted by our community. So thank you very much, everybody. Our LinkedIn posting was viewed almost 170 times and resulted in 15 click-throughs to the application. So thank you, Ann McSilver, for helping us with that and amplifying that post. Our Instagram posts were also widely viewed. So in addition to what Lisa just said about our outreach efforts, we've been making use of hashtags of like-minded organizations and folks we want to align ourselves with, such as the Oakland Latino Educators, the Asian American and Pacific Islander Teachers, GLSN, which is the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, Trans Teachers, the Black Teacher Project, Educators for Justice, the People's Conservatory, so many other organizations that we're able to reach out to on Instagram. Lots of equity and diversity minded hashtags to help broaden our reach. Thank you.
Thank you, Romy. Next slide, please. So I just wanted to share that we've taken some very small steps this year to have a broader base of where we're posting our positions. And we have heard from some members of our community who have suggested organizations to reach out to. What we're aiming to do is design a stronger infrastructure of our HR department, and we need some support. So this is where our OSA community can help. We'd love to hear from you. Please share with us the organizations that you feel are key for us to align with. And our goal, of course, because it's so important, is to hire more people of color at OSA. And that's the end of the school report.
Okay, public comment. I did not see any. I saw a lot of love for all the teachers. Karen Morphin for public comment.
Yes, I just have 2 points. One in regards to the recruitment of teachers of color. I think we not only have to look at how we recruit them, but how we retain them. And again, this is again a conversation of by not having a contract, by not having our teachers offer letters, you're not working towards retaining them. So let's start working on that. Lastly, in support of our teachers and also in the planning of next year, we would like to get more clarity as to, you know, how this is going to impact our teachers, especially given that they don't have a contract and that they don't have appropriate pay. I want to make sure that when we create the plan for next year, if we're going to have some type of hybrid model, that we're very careful that we're not having our teachers do double the work for the same amount of pay. And I also want to encourage the community to think about that as we share our comments, have the teachers in mind as well. You know, if they're going to be having a live class and then have to also manage Zoom at the same time or additional work after, I just think it puts them in a very difficult situation, especially given what we pay them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so board comment. Before we have board comment and discussion, I want to make sure we answer Mike's question. We're going to have another meeting to vote on the school reopening plan. Is there any other information we need from Mike?
I'm not sure if this is Josefina. I'm not sure if this has already been shared, but can we also see the site-based protection plan? Has that been shared with the board previously?
The site safety plan?
It's the protection, it's called the site, I think it's called a site-based protection plan. It's specifically related to the COVID health and safety measures. And so everyone is supposed to have one for their sites that talks about like the safety measures. And there's the county has detailed instructions about what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, we have it posted on the website, Josefina. I can also send a copy to the whole board. We call it our campus safety plan.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Wei Ling?
Yeah, I had 2 questions. One about the back to school plan, which is, are there going to be any classes that have both virtual and in-person, or are you splitting those up from each other?
For April, I'm not gonna get into too much detail because it would be a long conversation. We are not having a teacher have to be running a Zoom class and be in front of students at the same time.
Okay, great. That's awesome. And then my second question is, you know, and there's been a lot of, it's in the chat and I've just heard it on different listservs and stuff, is what is the salary range for the JEDI? Folks really want to help recruit, but it's hard not knowing what the salary is.
I can answer that. We are putting a range of, because this got sent out to a variety of different sources, $60,000 to $100,000 for the JEDI coordinator role.
Great, thank you, Lisa.
Mike?
Yeah, so thanks for a very thorough report. Lisa, I want to circle back to the stuff at the end about recruiting and suggest LinkedIn can be an amazing resource to go find candidates. And I think there's two ways to recruit. One is to post a job and hope somebody good applies. The other is to go find people that may not realize they're looking for work. I've worked with an organization a couple of times that will do that for us. They'll do recruiting on an hourly basis, not on a contingent fee basis, and could potentially be a resource to help you guys out. But I have to disclose that I've got the two people, they're two key recruiters I'm engaged with in an organization where I'm doing some interim work right now, but they may have some bandwidth and it wouldn't really conflict with that work for me to have them help you find some ARC folks. So if you're interested, I can put you in touch with them. We can connect offline.
Great, thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike. Other board discussion, anything else we need from the safety plan? I think so far we have what Josefina asked, and I think that was the main thing.
Elise, I have a couple of comments.
Go ahead.
Thank you. First, Mike and Lisa, thank you so much for all of the work that you and the team have put together in terms of just distance learning in the first place. And then around reopening, I know firsthand how difficult that is. So thank you for everything that you're doing. Two things. One is related to enrollment. And I know I mentioned this in the finance committee meeting, but I just want to reiterate it. I strongly caution against expanding enrollment or at least preparing a budget based on expanded enrollment when that proposed enrollment would not fit in the building with social distancing requirements. And then the second piece is I would recommend double checking with either OUSD or ACO. It's my understanding from ACO that if the CSP is posted, then all you need for the in-person instruction grant is that certification with the CDE by June 1st, not end of the month.
So that would mean we wouldn't have to vote, have another meeting to vote.
Right.
I can get clarity. What I have seen, and I can't tell you exactly where it is or find it right now, but I thought there were two different layers here. One was the approval for the August planning. I swear I have seen in writing somewhere that to return April 1st, we would need board approval on our plan. Hopefully I'm mistaken on that.
There was a piece about getting out of COVID testing if you had a plan approved before March 31st. But the other piece about that is if the county moved to the red tier, which okay. We're in.
Well, let me do my research. And that way, at least we know if we do need to schedule a time to have a vote that we'll have the information you need. And hopefully it's a non-issue.
Okay, great. Thanks. Great.
Thanks, Adrian. Mike, were you going to say something else? No, you left. No? Okay. Other thoughts about anything now? I think we've answered the question about what else we need for the opening plan.
I'm available for meetings if we need it. I mean, if we need it, then we should just go ahead and schedule as soon as possible. As soon as you find out, Mike, then we'll go with that. And Mike and Lisa, I want to thank you so very much on the administrator side. That was a lot of data and a lot of progress from last month's meeting. So thank you so very much. A lot of heavy lifting. And I know there's a team that's doing that. That's the entire school, but thank you.
All right. Thank you. And again, Mike and your team that I started writing down, thank you. I really appreciate how front and center kids are in all this work you're doing. Okay, WASC renewal update, Ms. Humphrey.
Hello, yes, I need slides, thank you. Next slide, please. Thanks. So I'm Julie Humphrey, I've been at OSA for 14 years. I am a middle school science teacher, sixth and seventh grade. I'm also the science department chair, and I am running the WASC renewal. I'm coordinating it, and this is the second time I've done that. I also did it 6 years ago. Next slide, please. Just to remind you, Lisa already talked about this, but the WASC is formerly known as ACS WASC, Accrediting Commission for Schools, Western Association of Schools and Colleges. They are the accrediting commission for us here in California, but also they go to schools all the way around the Pacific Rim. So they cover a lot of territory. Next slide, please. So I wanted to talk about the self-study, what it involves. Some of you are probably very familiar with this process, and others of you, it's what is this? But what it is called is a self-study, and they want us to look at ourselves and then report back to them. They want us to look at our school from every direction possible. I mean, you would be amazed at the sort of questions we're asked to answer. They want us to include stakeholders, people who are important to the school, and then they really do encourage us to uncover and identify areas that are problems. They don't want us to wallpaper over things and make our school look like it's heaven on earth. They want us to really identify where the areas are where we need to grow. We're in the midst of finishing up our report. The report's gonna be 150 pages or more. It's huge. And the next process after that will be that a committee of educators will come visit us in early May. And I'll talk about that more in a minute. Next slide, please. So I just want to give you a little background on WASC and OSA. So we opened in 2002 and we had a preliminary accreditation then, most likely. And then after that, we would get 2 or 3 year accreditations. And then in 2014, I worked with Don Harris and we applied again. And this time we got a 6 year accreditation, which is top notch. And even better was that all we had to do was file an interim report in 2017. We didn't need to have a return visit. So that was great news back then. Then timing came around that we were due for our last visit last April. I think it was like April 20th, around that time. And then WASC got a hold of us 6 months before and said there were so many visits that needed to be scheduled for different high schools and colleges. Would we be willing to delay our visit? And they would make our accreditation last for another year. So at the time we all decided, yes, that's a good idea. We were in the middle of the charter renewal. And so we said, yes, let's delay it. So we put it off until last November, and then COVID started. We'd already met a few times in our focus groups, and then COVID happened. And so we had to put everything on hold. So we've kind of started the process twice now already. Finally, in August, we set our new dates, which are May 2nd through 5th for our visit, which then backs us up to know that we need to start working on the report. So that's where we're at the moment. Next slide, please. So I just wanted to go over the report format quickly. So this kind of gives you an idea of the sorts of things we've been involved in. The report has a preface and it talks about the process we've gone through with the self-study this year. Chapter one is a sort of update on all the things that have happened since our last report, including, you know, our executive director changes, all kinds of other things that are happening at the school, where we've taken on new spaces that students meet in, the charter renewal, lots of things like that. Chapter two goes over our student community profile, and that's the data that's most recent, if possible. COVID has put a lot of things on hold, so like our state testing results are a year old, things like that. So it's a little bit of a hodgepodge, but we've tried to make things be as current as we could. Chapter three is where we did the self-study, and that's where we have focus and home groups. That's groups of people associated with OSA who've come together and answered a lot of questions, and ending up in trying to figure out where we have our strengths at the school and where we still need to do some growth. The next chapter four, is where we take all this information from the profile, from the self-study, put it together and see what our major learning needs are for our students. And then finally, we have our school-wide action plan, and that's where we lay out all the things we need to do for the future to improve our school. And that's a long, long list, and it's what we've been working on since 2014, and now we're moving into a new list. Next slide, please. So here are the different groups that met. We had about 20 people in each of our focus groups. There's governance, there's curriculum, there was instruction, there was an assessment group, and then there was a school culture group. And the next slide, please. I think I've got it lined out there. When these groups met, they had to wear so many different lenses, keep so many things in mind while they were going through all the prompts from the WASC committee, but they needed to keep in mind our critical student learning needs. They needed to keep in mind what we want our graduates to have, which are the school-wide learner outcomes. They needed to keep in mind state standards, and they also needed to keep thinking about how could we improve what we're seeing. Next slide. Thank you. So I just wanted to quickly point out what some of these things are. The critical student learner needs, we needed to try to determine what they might be ahead of time so that the focus groups could use these ideas as they were going through and answering questions. So we were pretty sure we would see that we wanted to improve math achievement for everybody at the school and especially our minority groups. We also wanted to include industry relevant career preparation for all students, which is putting CTE standards into all of our curriculum. And then we want to continue and improve the support of our student mental health. So this is what we thought we would need to think about. Please go to the next slide. The other thing is our graduate profile. You maybe have heard both these terms, ESLRs and READY, bandied about. ESLRs we've had for a long time, probably since 2010. They're the expected school-wide learning results. And these we pinned down for our school as effective communicators. We'd like to see our graduates be critical thinkers, be involved in the world, and also be very disciplined. A few years ago when we began working on our Measure N, we decided we wanted to change our graduate profile a bit. So a team met and came up with an acronym, READY. They thought that would be a lot more appealing and easier for people to remember. And the profile they came up with was reflection, engagement, advocacy, dedication, and then your voice and your journey. And we've been kind of caught now because of the pandemic as we were trying to transition from the ESLRs to READY. We haven't been in the building, so it's been very hard to get these new ideas across to everybody. So that's why I'm publishing both of these, and people are aware of both of these. And when we are back in the building, we'll move fully into READY, and we'll have that posted everywhere. And this is, teachers will take these ideas into all their curriculum. Next slide, please. So the focus group work we did included all faculty and staff that had a 0.6 appointment or more. The focus groups met four times this year. They met during our professional development. We also had started last year meeting, and so we met two times back then, and none of that work was lost. We were still able to use it. All the focus groups had a student and a parent member. And at the end of all that work, we were able to reconfirm the original student learner needs we'd identified, the math, the CTE, and the student mental health. So we're feeling pretty comfortable that those are the areas that we really need to focus on. Next slide, thank you. So I just wanted to point out who the stakeholders were that were involved. All the faculty and staff, they went through an orientation session. Some of them sat through it twice over the years. We had updates in our professional development meetings. They participate in the focus group and then the home group meetings too. Our home groups are our departments. So they've been very involved in WASC this year. The students were participating in the focus groups. And then we had a meeting as a home group for a group of students to go through the community profile. Parents participated in the focus groups. We also had a group of parents help us edit the parent engagement section of the community profile. And then we met with parents as a home group to review the community profile. Next slide. Thanks. The leadership team has been nothing but support. They're so great this year. I've met with them during their Thursday morning team meetings. People respond immediately to me when I ask a question about some aspect of our school life. They've met with me in Zoom meetings. They've uploaded lots of evidence for me. They've helped by doing some writing, and they've also all reviewed the community profile. So thank you, leadership team. And then finally, I shared the community profile with the board a week ago. And here's your update. So all of you have been made aware of WASC in some way or another. Next slide, please. Thank you. So we have our visit coming up. That will last from Sunday, May 2nd until Wednesday, May 5th. And all the WASC visits are still virtual. So we will have a lot of people Zooming in onto lots of our classes. Mr. Oz and I went to a meeting with the visiting committee chair, who's Lisa Anderson. She was an assistant principal for many years. She's retired, but we've talked over the beginning stages of the WASC visit. We're going to set up the WASC visit schedule very soon, which will be a lot of Zoom links. The visiting committee will want to meet with the board, with parent groups, with student groups, with staff, with faculty, and they'll want to observe classes, and they'll do that full time, like 7:30 in the morning until 7 at night, Monday and Tuesday. And then Wednesday, they will convene and then meet with us and tell us what their results are. And then I wanted to say to you, the board, that the board meeting traditionally happens on Sunday, late afternoon. And according to Mrs. Anderson's schedule, it looks like that's what she's still hoping will happen. So we'll get back to you very soon about when that will be exactly. Next slide, thanks. Here's the visiting committee. I just wanted to give everyone a chance to see who the people are who are gonna be coming and evaluating the school. They're coming from, you know, kind of all over, at least the Bay Area. If they were coming in person, we would be putting them up at a local hotel and paying for their meals. That's something that we do out of our school budget. So pandemic has saved us a little money, but I think it's gonna be way less satisfying, not nearly as fun as getting to show them our great school. All right, and the next slide, that is it. Questions or comments, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thank you, Julie. I'll take any, I don't see any public comment. Okay, so board conversation. So Julie, I have done these. Wow. They are a lot of work. So thank you for all that work. They are no small feat.
Thank you.
Julie, I've also been involved in WASC several times and it's a lot of work and thank you. I wonder if there's a way to get like a brief profile of the different individuals who are coming, just a little bit of background so we know a little bit more about them.
Sure, that's a great idea. Okay. Nice.
I have a question about how the WASC study is working with the strategic planning process, because I know WASC is going to want to know about our strategic plan. So I don't know what the alignment of these two work streams is relative to that.
That's a great question, Steve. I'm just going to share, because Julie is a saint. She has been working around the clock on the WASC and it's been great. But that last chapter, which is the action plan, is going to be, and we've been looking at it rough draft wise, that's going to be nicely folded directly into the strategic plan, because that's been the huge microscope and reflective piece of our school. So it has to be folded into that. Very important.
Thanks, Lisa.
Oh, Mike, you have your hand up.
I'm trying to be polite and use the feature.
Thank you. Josefina has taught us well.
Steve took my question. I will ask a different one and a confession. I don't recall, maybe I've just forgotten it, but previous WASC visits in my time on board, talking to the WASC folks. So I guess my question, Julie and team, is how many board members do they need to talk to? How do we coordinate that? How do we make sure it's not a quorum so it doesn't trigger Brown Act? And what kind of questions we might expect?
That's a great question, something that I will look into. I'm not sure how many people, how many board members they would like to have there. I went on a WASC, I was on a visiting committee a year ago to Santa Rosa to a humongous high school. And I think there were like three board members there. You know, it's a district school. So I think there were just three board members there. Okay. And it was late afternoon. There will be a schedule that has Zoom link for everybody. And so we will publish that as soon as possible, because I think everybody would like to have that on their calendars.
Thank you, Julie. Appreciate it.
I've been part of a board panel that has met with WASC both prepared and unprepared. It's much better if we have a little preparation in advance in terms of, you know, key questions, and so that we're sort of answering them in unison. So I don't know if that's possible to build into our internal process.
Elise could lead a practice session, I would bet.
Well, I can, well.
But Josefina has her hand up.
Oh, Josefina isn't showing up for me. Okay, Josefina.
Thank you. Thank you, Julie, for this incredible work. I had a chance to briefly look at the profile report. I was going to go back to it, but I wanted to ask you if the report includes the change that was made last year in terms of the governing board and the creation of specific parent seats that are elected by the larger parent body. I think that's a good indication of, you know, alignment in terms of parent engagement and also parent representation on the governing board. So if that's not in the report yet, I would include it.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I think it is, but now you're making me think I better double check. So thank you.
Okay, with no more board comment again. Thank you. Thank you, Julie.
I just want to say that I have been working hard, and it's because OSA is such an amazing place in every way. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, finance, Kimberly, Ms. Palmore.
Good evening, everyone. Yeah, I just want to piggyback on what Julie just said. OSA is an amazing place. Kudos again to all of the staff, you know, parents for hanging in there, teachers for working so hard, administration for doing all that they can for the students. I appreciate it very much as a staff member and a parent. So I realize we should have maybe bridged this after Mike's presentation. It would have been placed a little better, so excuse the jumping around in the agenda. But there were some specific questions that board members had about the different funding opportunities that the school would be able to go after should we decide to go back in person. So I just wanted to put this together so you guys could have some information on the different funding that has come to the school. And just to point out, again, this is restricted funding. It's not like we are just looking at receiving, you know, like a blank check per se. So we're working directly with Mike, with Lisa, with Lori to ensure that upon receiving these funds, that we are spending them appropriately. ESSER 2 and ESSER 3 is just another round of the federal funding that's coming to the school. And the in-person instruction grant, expanded learning opportunity grant, these are the preliminary amounts that they have released. We work with CSMC, of course, to give us the most recent amount once it comes out. So once they announce the grant opportunities, you know, you go to a page and they tell you this is what you are expected to receive. So we don't anticipate much in terms of the shifts with these numbers. It may be, you know, some slight changes. But this is what we are looking to receive. It talks about what we would need to do to get them. Mike went through all of this in his presentation with the paraprofessionals that we would have to hire. For the most part, it covers anything that we would need to do to get ready for in-person instruction, cleaning, professional development, emotional support hires for the kids, resources, technology, all different types of things that we, you know, would need to get ready to get the students back in school. And it also lets you know that the time frame that we have to go through the funds. So it's definitely a large sum of money. This is, as we know of right now, just one-time support that is being offered to the school. So as we go through the funding cycles, we will, like I said, ensure that we are spending the money appropriately and continue to give you updates once we get finalized numbers on all of the funding sources. But everything is in place for us to be back in school to receive the funding, and then as well as to do the expanded learning opportunity throughout the summer, possibly as well as in the fall. Just wanted to give you guys specific dollar amounts with what we know now. Any questions?
Yeah, Kimberly, I'll jump in while the slide's still up. I just want to clarify a couple of things. These are one-time funds.
Mike, can we just acknowledge there's no public comment, and then we'll go to the board.
Sorry.
Okay, no public comment. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. So these are one-time grants. For example, if I look at the in-person instruction grant, the $228,000, we don't know that we're going to get that this year and then again next year. What you're showing us is that's one time and we just have until next August to spend it.
If I'm reading this
correctly. Okay.
Correct.
And I think I'm also right in assuming that some of these dollars, the total dollars will be allocated between two buckets. One is new things we need to spend that weren't normally part of our budget. And then some other, we may be able to offset some things that are in our budget and allocate them to these funds. That's where you're working with CSMC.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Correct.
Kimberly, is this use it or lose it funds? Do you know?
I'm sorry, you were breaking up.
Are these use it or lose it? If we don't spend this all, do we lose it?
We would have to return it, yes. If okay. We cannot show by the time that we have to get through, August 2022 or 2023, when we turn in our report, if we have received the funds by then and we do not show that we have exhausted the funds, we would have to return them.
Okay. Wei-Ling?
First, this is just really great. Thank you, guys. I know that you and Mike Oz and a lot of people had to really jump on it to get all these applications in on time. So I want to really appreciate that. And, I'm curious if there's enough funding here to look at additional space, given the challenges we have with the windowless rooms in the Fox.
Funding could be used for whatever we would need to provide the safety guidelines for in-person instruction. So if that's something that the team felt we needed to explore, that is definitely, that would be an allowable expense for us.
Back to the tents in the parking lot.
Yeah, just to chime in on that, I'm awaiting the professional's opinion on the interior spaces. To me, that's going to be a real big indicator. I've had a lot of suggestions, a lot of people trying to be very helpful, and I really appreciate that, like suggesting where we could move outside and put a tent up. And it's great in theory until you start thinking of all the noise bleed of a downtown center. And like, if there was a great space close by that had classrooms that suited us, that worked well within our budget, yes, we should absolutely consider it. But the odds of that, I think, are not super high at this point.
Got it.
Other board comments, discussion?
Kimberly, can you clarify for me the hire, rehire of paraprofessionals? Is that a category that we have in people who have not been working, or is it creating new positions?
It's both. So we can create new positions or rehire people that, say if we had a paraprofessional on staff at one point, but their services, were no longer needed at this moment, but we decided to rehire them and bring them back, opening up some old positions if that were the case, but also opening up new positions. It covers both of those.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Kimberly. So we do not have a report today on fundraising. We don't have an advancement report. Although it was on the agenda, it's been pulled. So we are going to adjourn into closed session. I'm going to recommend we take a 10-minute break. And you all have it in your email, your OSA email, and I did a calendar invite. Is there anyone who needs me to resend it?
Elise, did you send it to the folks that I emailed you earlier?
I sent it to the people who were on the closed session agenda. So you, Mike, Lori, and Kimberly.
And Jeff. I forwarded and Jeff. To him. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so at 7:49, we're going to adjourn into closed session. Let's go back into closed session at 8 o'clock. So we can take a quick 10-minute break and I will see everyone then. Thanks everyone for coming. And we'll come back and reconvene from closed session as soon as we can. One. Two, three, four. Okay, we have a quorum back. We are back into open session. It's 9:25. There's nothing to report out from closed session. And on that note, I'm gonna adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone. See you on the 26th.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you.